Hello and welcome to the Voice of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane and I believe that trusting your intuition is the best way to live your life with meaning and purpose. Each week you will hear about how you can connect, develop and trust your intuition. Through the wonderful array of guests we have on the show and my own personal experiences. Join me to understand how your intuition can guide you towards a life full of meaning and loving purpose. Hello and welcome to the Voice of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane and I'm your host for the podcast. And I would love to ask you to subscribe, like, or share the podcast so we can get this information out to a lot more people that need it. Today we have a wonderful guest on. But what I really liked about this guest when she first approached me is, now this sounds terrible, but all the crap that she's been through. Now, I didn't really like all the crap that she's been to, but I love the fact that she's used that, all those negatives, all those troubles, all those traumas that we have, and she's used them in a really, really positive manner. And of course, she's going ahead and she's a coach now and really getting ahead. So you may be going through a lot of crap, and that's the technical term that I use, in your life, but I have people on board like this lady today because it's proof that you can get through it. We can all get through it, and we just need to know some of those little secrets to do that. And today we have got a secret. And when you find out what mea culpa means, then you will understand what the secret is all about. So we are going to bring, I was going to tell you a little bit about our guest, but I'm going to let her do that, which is what I normally do anyway, so that's no surprise. Birgitta is from the UK. So she's actually calling in from the UK. So that's also nice too, because I've not long been over there and had a visit. So welcome to the show, Birgitta.
Hi, Susan. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure, I can assure you. I'm going to just get straight into it because we've got so much I want to share. I want to get an understanding of. There is a health situation there. Now, I have tried to pronounce this and my Australian accent, or my tongue, has trouble with it every time. You're going to explain it, how you ever say it. And we're going to go through some of those ways of, you know, the trauma and the things that you've dealt with and how you have, what you've done, that flow and effect. And I know that you start to go through, we all start to do that. We start to look externally, but then how you've actually come through it. So tell us a little bit about you first.
So yeah, indeed, I am a soul empowerment coach, but I've also got a foot in the corporate world. So, you know, I'm being a soul empowerment coach. It really is in the wording because it's empowering people to return to the grid of their own soul essence, returning to their authentic nature by alchemizing and healing their experiences. So that's one, and I also. You know, I also speak light language, so, and use my sound healing bowls because it's, I call that a shortcut to healing. And it's just very, very powerful. So that's what I do in a nutshell.
Right. And how did you get to, like, you have gone through a lot, you know, starting abuse as a child, and you've gone through a lot. Can you walk us through a bit of your life? Because I think when we walk through our lives, we can connect with those people and they get an understanding because so many of us have gone through things. And I know when I hear somebody has experienced something that I've experienced, I feel like I can connect with them because it's like, oh, they know what it's like. They know what it feels like. So tell us a little bit about your life and how you've come through all that.
Yeah. So when I was a child, I grew up in Singapore and Malaysia. We moved there for several years. And I had these funny characters, first of all. I had a flasher and you know, I was like 10 years old. I just didn't understand it. And I ran away from him because he kept saying, I know your dad, and covering his privates. And eventually I ran away because I just didn't understand. And then when my sister and I went to school in Kuala Lumpur, we followed a course in Bahasa Malaysia, and the teacher kept stroking all the way up my legs every time I'd done exercises. And, you know, we finished our exercises and I had to go to the teacher's table, you know, and he would correct the exercises. And my sister told my parents, and the dean called me in, and my parents were called in, and they said, "You've done nothing wrong." And I had to write everything down, every little detail of what he'd done. And once it was done, I was so upset because he got fired. And it's easy for an adult to say, you know what, this is not your fault. But because you have to go through all the motions, not quite understanding when you're 10, 11 years old, what's happening. And so after that, what happened was when my dad lost his job, we moved to a friend's place in Kuala Lumpur. And this is where I got abused. And my parents just didn't even know. And it just stayed with me because I didn't understand it. I think, you know, in the 1980s, life was very different to what it is now. And so I kept that potted up. And then when we moved back to Holland, because there was no more money in the kitty, I got bullied in high school because I was so skinny. And, you know, my dad died several months later when I was 14 years old. So that was that was kind of a double whammy. And because I carried that trauma, it was really weird because I never used to take the front entrance to get to class. I would always take the basement entrance. And if there was a guy in the corridor, I would not pass him. That's how scared I was. And I would just take another route to the classroom to get where I needed to go. So, and then several years later, at the age of 16, my mom decided to put me on a modeling course and see if that would help with my confidence, because I was walking around like the Hunchback of Notre Dame. I just wanted to be invisible, and I was also starving myself. I would make my sandwiches in the morning, take them to school, and throw them out mostly. But at night, you know, I would have my dinner. And so I was picked out from this modeling course to be a hair model for the main hair model for a show. And I had quite long hair. And what happened was the hairdresser cut it short into a pixie cut. Go ahead.
No, that's all right. We were just losing you. We lost you a little bit. Got up to that you were a hair model, but the hairdresser cut it short.
Yes, he cut it into a pixie cut. Absolutely. And so I felt horrified. I felt ugly.
Oops. He's still having a little bit of issues
with
me.
Just didn't confidence at all. And it was just one of these things. And, you know, when I was nearly 22, I had my first relationship and it was just toxic, because that's why I always say one bit of trauma creates another bit of trauma if you don't heal that trauma. And you just keep attracting these toxic experiences. And so I rolled in several very toxic relationships. But, you know, I really look back and I'm just thankful for everyone that's been in my life. And yes, I also suffered from something called vaginismus, which I didn't even know. I had no clue what it was until I was about 38 years old. And it's when women, and it's not just women, it's also men. And I'll explain to you very in layman terms. But when we go through trauma in our childhood and we carry that into our adulthood, when we become sexually active, it's like this, your experiences and all that you've been through, it just blocks it. And I always say it's like this little hypothalamus within our within our brains, which archives all our experiences. And so when something invasive enters your body, it's like, oh, it looks in the archives of your mind and it's like, oh, no, no, it's associated with this traumatic experience, boom, and it blocks it. And it's something that's, I think it's, I mean, you know, back then it was pretty much taboo. Nobody really talked about it. But it's, that's why it's so important to, you know, to heal the trauma and to move forward with your life.
And when you're talking about that and you're sort of saying, all right, so you've had, say, a trauma, a rape or abuse, yep, or anything else like that, and you're saying that this situation is that when you do go into a relationship, you say it blocks it. Now, what do you mean by it blocks it? Does your body break down or is it in your mind?
It's always in your mind. Susan, everything stems from the mind.
Yes.
And that's the thing. So sexual intercourse for me was just painful. It was like, after I'd had it, I'd be walking like a waddling duckling. It was like acid. You know, it was hell for me.
So your body basically produced that?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So it's still a physical situation because obviously it's physical, but like a lot of our emotions and situations, we can create that physical environment.
Yes,
like when you get excited or when you get scared, you get sweaty palms, you know, that sort of thing. So the body's actually creating this inside you.
Yes.
And then when that's happening, it's, oh, not good. Not good at all.
Exactly.
So it was like really, really painful. That was your sort of symptom.
Yeah. It was very, very painful. And, you know, I mean, when I went to the hospital, they gave me dilators. And I remember my last ex, he just made fun of it. And I just chucked them out because that just wasn't helping me. You know, I look back at it now and I mean, I'm okay now. But that is the thing. We create our own dis-ease. Everything, if we do not heal from our experiences, and we don't hug it out with ourselves, as I always say, you know, we keep walking around with a dis-ease within our bodies because our soul is not aligned with our physical essence.
Right. Oh, really? That just makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Especially with women, when you are having issues down there, to be looking back at what you're doing and where it's going. So, yeah, that's... And when you wrote that, and I had never heard of that terminology before, and even how you say it, because it's when you look at the description, you see how it's written. It's really quite challenging how to say it. But yeah, I had to look it up, and I thought, wow, I wonder if there's other people going through that because I haven't experienced that, but I have had the abuse as a child, not as a child. I was pack raped as a teenager. So I've experienced that sort of side to it, but I've never experienced what you were saying. And it was like, wow, I didn't know. I know your body can do some pretty cool stuff. That's not necessarily cool, but I know it can. So it was really amazing to see that they've actually acknowledged it in that sort of terminology.
Yeah, it's because, you know, like I said, it's the trauma. I was stuck in that trauma, and so my body just reacted in that way.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So you've gone through all that and you've gone through the relationships. What was like your catalyst? What was it that made you go, hey, you know what? I've had enough of this. I'm going to start doing something about it. And I mean, I know it's never a huge big, people think it's this great big aha moment, which it isn't.
No.
It's usually just these little subtle, you don't like that. Let's try something different. Let's try something different. So what were your little aha moments?
So my aha moment came in, when was it? 2009. And I was in a relationship with an American, actually. He's doing very well now. He's been healing his demons, so to speak. His shadow sides, he's been walking through his shadow sides. Yeah, he came and lived with me in Holland, and I didn't know he was like his part-time crack addict. I had no inkling. And because he'd hidden it really, really well. And what happened was he landed in bed with the Crips in Holland. And I'd never seen someone with crack hands, and he really did want to get help, but he didn't have a social security for Holland, which made it really difficult. And he just couldn't get in anywhere. And it just, it was horrific for me to see. You know, I had to get the police involved because he broke into my place. When I kicked him out, he pawned my stuff. I had to pay for a hotel for him because I just didn't want him in my home. And then he got grabbed by the Crips, and they held him for ransom. And I helped the police locate him, and they found him, and they deported him back to the U.S. And that was actually the catalyst to me healing, because my mom took me out of the U.K. Out of Holland in the space of 3 days. And the leader of the Cribs had threatened to find me and kill me because I'd saved my ex's life. And that was really horrific for me. And when I got to the UK, I just took a whole box of Nurofen, which is similar to ibuprofen, and just downed it in one go. And all that happened was I got a good night's sleep and my headache was gone the next day. But I really needed to heal myself because I felt so, so low. And so my mom said to me, Brigitte, why don't you go and see a counselor? And I did, but it was just useless for me because the counselor just said, you know what, Brigitte, you're strong enough, you will be fine. I'm sorry, but that to me is not counseling. And so I figured I needed some other type of holistic healing, and I found a Reiki healer. And so for me, that was a journey of self-discovery. It's not like, you know, I had guidance from someone saying, oh, you know what, this is a good healer. So I had to do my research. And that was the start of my healing journey, because I also went on to become a Reiki healer and a Reiki master. And in those days, as you well know, you know, you didn't get the cert. You didn't become certified in the space of a weekend. It was really, you had to do self-healing for like 6 months. And then for level two, I had to do quite a few case studies. So that took me another year. But then I also studied EFT, the emotional freedom technique, where you tap the emotions out of your system, so to speak, so that you can just talk about the experiences without getting upset. I studied meditation, relaxation therapy, aromatage, holistic nutrition, which helped me a lot, because I also needed to learn, you know, to start listening to my body. And I think many people just don't, because we throw so much junk into our body. And my dad always used to say, you know, your body is a temple, treated as such. So yeah, I even studied drug and alcohol abuse, because I just wanted to understand the mind of an addict. So I was really like the SpongeBob, absorbing so much knowledge. And, you know, my life seemed to be on the up for a little bit, until I met another experience that kicked me even further into the abyss. Because this guy in Florida, he was just obsessed with me. He'd lost his mom. He fell into a depression, couldn't find a job, had a reckless, bless his heart. Trust me, but he's doing very, very well now. And it got so bad, Susan, that I sold my home because he was just harassing me. And I loved my home in St. Pete, but I just needed to get away from him. I mean, I was very much in that fight or flight mode, and I was always anxious and looking over my shoulder. And, you know, he had the keys to my home as well, and he refused to return them because he's like, yeah, but you threatened me with the police. I said, but no, I said, I never did. I said, you threatened me with immigration. And so it wasn't a nice way to live, but I still tried to help him out, you know, paying the bills and getting him food and stuff, and trying to help him look for jobs. And I think that's always been I'm not going to say it's a mistake because it's an experience, but in a way, I enabled them because I didn't let them hit rock bottom. And, you know, I wasn't helping myself either because I remained stuck in that same programming that I'd always been stuck in, you know, helping everyone else, you know, I'm working my socks off, right? Because that was my coping mechanism and starving myself.
Yeah. And I've just jumped in there because I see it happening all the time. And I put my hand up because I did exactly the same. And us empaths tend to do that, unfortunately. We can see somebody hurting and we want to help. And often we're doing that. I sort of looked at it a little bit differently as I've grown through it as well. And it's like, for me to be helping that person, they're not living the experience they need to live in order to learn and grow. So I always got to the stage where instead of actually helping, I would wait for them to actually see that they were doing it themselves or see that they were having a go, and then I would offer help. So until, you know, I could turn around and say, oh, well, you need to get a job or you need to do this, you know, why don't you look at that? Why don't you could say all that. But I never, ever would do anything until I could see that they were having a go. And I see it in a lot of the teenagers nowadays or the younger people coming through. And it's like, oh, I need to get a job. And, okay, well, you need to get your resume done. Oh, well, can you do that for me? No, I can't. No, you got to do that. I can help you. Yep. You need to get started. You need to take those steps to self-empowering. You need to take those things. And then as you see that, and as I see people, even when I see buskers on the street, I sort of think to myself, they're having a go. I'll put some money in. But when I see somebody sitting around the pub having a drink thinking, oh, woe is me, I can't get a job or I can't do this or I can't do that, then you go, well, hang on, I can't see that you're actually doing anything apart from whinging and grizzling and being annoying. I can't see any other positivities with that. So yep. I absolutely agree with you. We do want to help. We are the last of the care bears, that's what I call ourselves. but it can be so detrimental not only to us but to the person we're actually trying to help.
Yeah, because, you know, we stump our own growth, but we also stump that person's growth. And so I needed to come to that realization. And it was a second time that I was desperate. I couldn't, I was lying on the floor and I was crying. I was just crying. I was so down and out. And even though I bought another place, I really wasn't that happy in there. But I was exasperated. And I said to Spirit, I really need help. I said, because I can't do this anymore. And so I got that in the form of my sister at the time, and she told me, why don't you do Kumbo? And so I went to see a shaman up in Gainesville and in the Gainesville area in Florida, and went in with no expectations because I'm not one of these people that does a lot of research. If it feels right for me, I'm just going to go in blind.
I do the same.
Yeah. And that was very, very powerful. And I'll explain very quickly what Kumbo is because not a lot of people know it. But it's you get either on your arm or on your leg, you get four, I think it's a, I have three or four points that are the top of your skin is burned off, so to speak, 4 points. And the shaman puts on the Kumbo frog poison, and these little frogs, nocturnal frogs, live in the Amazon forest. And you know, the shaman scraped the poison from the monkey tree frog, but none of the frogs die. And so the poison was put on these points, and thank heavens I had a happy yellow bucket right next to me, because I was purging like no tomorrow. And I had to get to help me run up and down the toilet because it came out everywhere. But, you know, he was so used to it. And it was my ego that was battling so badly, you know, because I was so set in my ways that it took like 4 hours. And yeah, it was, I mean, it was amazing because it really helped give me clarity. And I did it 2 more times after that in the next couple of weeks. And it became easier for me. But what I did was I made a bucket list of all the things that I wanted to do. And then one of them was skydiving, because I had an immense fear of heights. I've always had an immense fear of great heights. And, you know, I live on the 11th floor in my building here. But so from there, several weeks later, there was a fair in St. Pete, and I went, and I met my former mentor there, Alania Starhawk, and she helped me so much, because she's an Akashic record healer. So I walked through quite a few past lives, and
hang on a minute, Vegeta. I want to explain to people, because a lot of people don't know what the Akasha lives are, mm-hmm. or the Akasha. Oh gosh, I forgot what the names are called. But a lot of people don't understand what these. Can you just explain that a little bit? And why I want to do that is because what you've talked about is you've talked about a lot of healing modalities that you've gone through. And this is when I said to you, we don't usually have a big aha moment. We have a catalyst of what will send us that way. But we have to do, when you said we have to do our research, I often think, well, that's getting on the computer and researching. But no, when we're doing our research, it's experimenting. It's trying different modalities to get an understanding. And like you said, was it Como you said?
Combo.
Like, so when you're experimenting with these different things, you're going to get different results from them. And this is what I'd love people to get that understanding about, you know, having a go at different things, and it might not be for you. It, like horses for courses, you know, it might not be for you, but it may be just that breakthrough that you need. So the Akasha records was what I wanted to do. Yeah. So can you explain what they are before you go any further?
So yeah, the Akashic records, they hold in a nutshell, they hold all your lifetimes. And so it's like, so for me, it was really walking through my past lives. And that is what Alania did. Now, what happens when you walk through, I walked through one where I was together with my ex in Florida. I had several lifetimes with him. One was in the Second World War, where he was a poor Jewish painter, had no money. And I came from a rich textile family, and I helped many of the Jews escape through the tunnel networks under Paris. So that was one. And that explained to me why, when I visited Paris when I was 18, I had an immense aversion against that place, and I couldn't put my finger on it. And then years later, I understood why. But there was another lifetime where he had poisoned me. And it was in the Middle Ages. And I'm not sure exactly what I did, but I was very well respected. And he was a charlatan. And it was very powerful, because I also went through health problems where I literally, Susan, I couldn't stomach anything when I was in that relationship with him. And that was because I was poisoned in that lifetime, and I lost so much weight. I was I was skin over bones in this lifetime. And once she healed that aspect, the energies changed. And that is why it's so powerful going, delving into your past lifetimes and healing that karma and healing the energy, the stuck and stagnant energy, because I changed, but his attitude also changed. And that was great, because he started to leave me alone. And he started to sort out his own life. And so that's why I say it's powerful. It's very, very powerful.
And you're talking about us going through lives, the different lives, and how we actually go, we have the same connections as we go. Mm-hmm. And I have a strong belief on that, an understanding on that, because the people that we know, like someone who could be my mother this year, this lifetime, may have been my daughter or a son in another lifetime. And it's that connections that we have with them, not necessarily if they're male, female, rich or poor. It's the connections that we have with them. And yes, yeah, so they what do they call them? They call them group or
So there's your soul tribes.
Tribes, that's it, yeah, the soul tribes, yes, yeah. So I have heard that before. And it does make you go, well, hang on, why was I with that person? Did I heal what I needed to heal with that person? You know, did I, was it successful? Was it what it needed to be? And if you do have connections still or a strong, like I say, aversion or a connection, that's is indicating that there's something there. I have a strong connection with Scotland. And when I went there late last year, when I went there, it was like, it was almost like I was coming home.
Wow.
And I've never been to Scotland before that I know of, because I was 2.5 when I left England to come to Australia. Mm-hmm. But when I went through Scotland, I was like, this is where I belong. This is where I'm supposed. And yet, no way known am I going to live in Scotland because I don't like the cold. And yet the whole feeling was exactly that. It was like, wow, this feels so nice. So I'm actually going to organise to do a trek through Scotland. I don't know how that's going to happen because we're doing the Camino walk this year. Mm. But I'd love to do a trek through Scotland because it's calling me for some reason. And now that you have spoken about that again, the little aha moment just went off and it's like, well, obviously I've been there. Obviously that's part of my past lives as well.
Yeah. Go do it.
I'm going to. But anyway, that's gonna all right. So what I want to ask you now is that, so we've got an understanding of how you're going through it. You had a little mantra that you wrote on your bio for me, which was the mea culpa. And I'd not heard that before either. I did look it up because I'm a little bit of a nerd and I like doing things like that. So I looked it up to get an understanding of it, but I'd love you to explain it in your terms, what it means and how that's really helped you.
Yeah, so I use that a lot, actually, mea culpa. So it means, it does mean like through my fault, you know. And it means like, oh, you know, I've done it. And I always say when I say that, it's about taking responsibility for your life, you know, and seeing, I wouldn't say the error of your ways, but understanding the experiences and healing from that. That's what it's in short. And the other thing, how I see that is never be ashamed of any of the experiences you've gone through, or if you feel like you've made mistakes, never be ashamed of it, because everything in life is an experience and you're here to learn and you're here to return to a love of yourself and each other. And the only way you're going to do it is by ditching all the labels, you know, and I think that's just an end of fear, because fear is just something that's in your mind.
Mm. Okay, I love that. Yeah, and I love that idea, the mea culpa, is where you start to sort of take ownership. Mm. And one of the things that I've always looked at is that if there is a situation happening, I say how much of that is my fault? How much of that is mea culpa? How much is my fault?
Yeah.
And because anything that's your fault that you can lay claim to, you then have power to change it.
Absolutely.
If you can't, if it's not your fault, if you want to blame the guy down the road for driving on, you know, the grass, or if you want to blame the government, then you give anybody else you want to blame, you give power to.
Yeah.
But when I turned around and started going, okay, my ex-husband was a big drinker. How is that my fault? What part of that is my fault? And I'd go, okay, maybe he's going to the pub every night because he doesn't want to come home to me, because maybe I'm not looking pretty enough. Maybe I'm not cooking dinner enough. Maybe I'm not doing this. Maybe I'm not doing that. And I would go right through everything to find out what snippet of that could have been my fault. And can I change it? And that's what I did. So I started to tidy myself up. I started to make dinner. I started to do this. And then he would phone up and go, well, what's for dinner? And I'd say, and he didn't like that, so he didn't come home. So I got an understanding of, okay, so I've changed a lot of the stuff, which he really should have been looking at, but I have looked at it for myself. I've done the mea culpa and I have gone, okay, if that's not going to make him change, then obviously I have no control over him going to the pub and drinking. And so I could allow that to go. That was no longer my problem. It was no longer my control. And if I stressed and worried about it, I'm not going to achieve anything. So I got on with my life. And that was one of my things that I started doing. And then I started to step through my healing journey, and I started to go through all those learnings and that understanding of it. And that was how I dealt with it. I had to let go of the stuff we don't have control over.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? We're not responsible for other people. You know, we like to, I call it this, the doormat syndrome. You know, we try and mold ourselves. We try and change ourselves and conform to someone that we're not because we want to please other people. Oh, that's a great way to hurt yourself. You know, people say, yeah, but this person hurt me and they did that to me. No, actually, they did not. You allowed the wording to make you feel that way. You know, at any point, when you take that responsibility, you can change the status quo. So now, for me these days, because I was, oh my gosh, I was a people pleaser to a T. I was always so scared of hurting others. I ended up hurting myself. Yes. And, you know, you can't fix other people. They have to fix themselves. And we're all reflections of one another, right? We're all teachers of one another. And if we see it that way, if we really see it that way, and we don't get sucked into the torrent of our experiences, and we just learn to let go, life becomes infinitely easier. And there's something, because, you know, I've been channeling for quite a few years now, and that is a funny story in itself, because I learned that from Alania through a workshop she had. And she did a meditation, counted to three, and then when she counted back from three to one, that's when I came back into the room. And everyone had said, oh my gosh, I've seen these ascended masters, the archangels, I got this message, I saw the colors, blah, blah, blah. And I was sitting somewhere in a corner, you know, because I like to sit on my own. I wasn't sitting in a circle. I was so upset, Susan. I was actually sniffling and the tears were rolling down my face. So I wiped it with the sleeve of my vest. And she gave one exercise where she said, this is how I did it. And she's like, I took a pen and a pad and I said to Spirit, I am ready to receive. Well, after the workshop, I ran out, hopped in my car and went home. And that exercise stuck in my mind. And I sat down. I actually did sit down that evening and I said to Spirit, I'm ready to receive now. And I think I was so exasperated that I wasn't in my head. And the word just started to flow. And I'm telling you, I was crying tears of joy. That's how happy I was. And so what I did is I started to practice every single day. Because like, you know, when you go to the gym, you do it on a regular basis. And it was really about a lot of self-healing, asking questions, and just, you know, listening to their response and writing it down.
Wow. Yeah, that's nice when it all starts to come through, isn't it? It takes a while, but it's so nice. Now, what I didn't do is let people know, because I had the little ticker tape going, but I forgot to let everyone know. If they wanted to contact you, they can go through www.powersoulhealing.com. Mm-hmm. Nice and easy. Powersoulhealing.com. I forgot to put that down there. But the other thing I've got going on the ticker tape now is your book. So you've got a lovely book. Now, I had a look at your book, or not right inside, but I had a little bit of the read up on your book.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked how you've split it up into two sort of phases. So you've got the understanding about you and who you are and where you were, what you went through and everything else. And then you've got that almost like the how to, like how to move forward and you know, grow and develop. So your book is called Becoming Authentically Me. Now, how it is written is B in capital letters, then a dash, C-O-M come with a dash, and then I-N-G. Mm-hmm. Why is it written like that? And what is your book all about?
No. It was funny because it was given to me by the Council of Ra. So I work with a lot of the Ascended Masters, and this happened to be the Ascended Master Todd. But I work a lot with the Ascended Master Saint Germain, to be honest with you. And so I'm like, well, what is that supposed to mean? Well, they said, well, you can, if you change the letters around, it becomes being.com. And .com is, of course, what do you call it? Blah, 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 blah.
The URL.
Yes, the worldwide suffix for URLs. Yes. And so that's worldwide. But it's, and then they said the COM also means the creation of myself. So it's being the creation of myself, because you create and express yourself every second of every single day.
Yes.
Because we're manifestors and we create our own lives. And people may say, yeah, but you know what? This has happened to me and this has happened to me. I honestly don't care what has happened to you. Take responsibility, you know, because at any moment, because we're all we've chosen the characters in our life. We're the actor. I mean, we're the producer. We're the director. You know, we've created the stages. We do everything. So you don't like the script, change it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you get that in the book. Is that what the book will help you with?
Yeah. So the first part is really about the conscious shift. It originally wasn't supposed to be in there, but they put everything in there from why everything that's been happening in the world. They talk about COVID. They talk about the fact that the greatest healers are we ourselves, but we look so much outside of ourselves that we forget there is so much potential within each of us. So I talk about the fact that there is no death. I introduce Archangel Michael. I love Archangel Michael as well. He's got a sense of humor. But, you know, when you ask any of the masters for help, any of the light beings, it doesn't matter. So if you ask Archangel Michael for help, you know, in overcoming your fear, well, do you think he's going to keep that fear at bay? No, you have to walk through that fear. And so he will just push your face right into your fears, because you've asked for it, right? You want to enhance your life, and you're not going to enhance your life or better your life by staying in the painted lines that you so craftily created around you.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah, and then the second part is really like about my life and the trauma I went through. And then there are many channeled messages. And yes, it also has exercises in there.
Oh, cool. Sorry, I got it around the wrong way. But yeah, okay. That's really interesting. And they can get that on Amazon?
Yes.
Or they can get it at, hang on, what was the name again? PowerSoulHealing.com. They can get it there too on your website.
Yes.
Yeah, cool. We're getting to the end of time now.
Yeah.
Is there anything you'd like to bring forward before we say goodbye?
Well, they're saying never give in to your fears, because fear is that's the Ascended Master Saint Germain. He says fear is a mind bender. You know, fear is the Darth Vader to your Jedi. It's really about alchemizing your experiences and understanding that your experiences are not here to downgrade you. but they're here to help you elevate and expand your awareness and understand life. You know, there's something that the Ascended Master Krishna, and I'm currently writing my second book on India, and he always says, you know, you have to return to a joy within yourself, because once you're joyful within, you will spread that joy without and your life will start to change, because, you know, we're all energy. So the frequency changes and you hum to a different tune, because what you vibe out is exactly what you fight back in, because that's the law of cause and effect. So you are the captain of your own ship, and returning to your authentic nature means simply letting go of your ego. It means letting go of the conditioning, unlearning everything that you have learned, and returning back to the basics of yourself. Yeah. And when I say the basics of yourself, it also means that, you know, when you listen to people, you hold space for them and you accept them and you embrace them and you love them just as they are, because we are all on different, you know, at different levels of consciousness, different levels of awareness. And that is okay, because if we were all the same, how could we ever learn from one another? So conquer your fears, and start living life that is in tune and in harmony with your soul essence.
Oh, that was lovely. And my heart chakra was just beaming then. Oh, that was lovely. You could hear the coming through, the channeling coming through. Beautiful. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
Have a look at the website, guys. All right. I have to say goodbye. Stay on the line and I'm going to chat with you again in a sec. Hang on. Let me do this. Press the right buttons. Check out the website. You really got to check out that website. So it is Power Soul Healing. Make sure I've got that right. Power Soul Healing. Let me have a look again. PowerSoulHealing.com. Yeah, for sure. Have a look at it. It's beautiful. It's actually a beautiful website to start with. But you'll get the book on there and get a bit more understanding. Follow Brigitte. I keep saying her name wrong. I do apologize. Follow Brigitte. I think she's on all the socials. I can't remember if I checked that all out, but follow her and get an understanding, because if you're going to get tidbits like that, beautiful channeling like that, you just can't go wrong. It's amazing. But that's it for today. Follow, share, like the podcast, and we'll get some of that beautiful channeling out to everyone else as well, which would be really nice. I'm Susan Jane. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you next week. Bye for now.